We're in the studio now with Glenda Novinger, the conductor and director of the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra. I'm Jack Peterson here recording this on Monday, October 14th, but we will air this this Thursday morning. Either way, I can say good morning to you. Good morning, Glenda. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Jack. I am doing well, thank you.
It's nice to have you back. You've been in here, I think, just one other time.
Yes.
But for a wonderful conversation we had about kind of the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra in general. And at that time, I think right before either a spring concert or the 4th of July celebration. Mm-hmm. Right now, you are coming up on two big important events, one October 20th and then the others on the 8th. The details, before we talk more about the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra, just the rough details of those events, when and where and what are coming up.
Yes, this coming weekend, this Sunday, October 20th at 2 p.m. at Becker Auditorium, which is Bonners Ferry High School Auditorium, mm-hmm. we are going to be the Novinger Music Center students, along with the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra, are collaborating to present the Schubert Festival Concert featuring music by Franz Schubert, who was a early Romantic era composer. And that's going to be exciting. And then December 8th at 3 p.m. in the same location, Becker Auditorium, the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra will be presenting our Christmas concert this year entitled Christmas Through the Ages.
Okay. Christmas Through the Ages is the holiday concert on the 8th of December. But this Sunday is Schubert, Franz Schubert, who I know, I probably know about as much about Franz Schubert as the average layman. I know he was a conductor, and in my mind, not quite as prominent as, say, Mozart or Beethoven or Bach, but one of those conductors whose names you recognize in at least a few pieces. Do you guys usually do a kind of, do you pick one one conductor or one composer to recognize every year, or is it, or yes. do you usually do, okay.
Every October, mm-hmm. I choose one composer, and we, the combination of Novinger Music Center and the community orchestra, collaborate to present a concert with just that composer's music. Mm-hmm. And I do research on the composer and then write a narrative that is shared little by little as each performer gets up. Each one will say a little bit about the composer so that by the end of the concert, you've not only heard a number of pieces by that composer, but you also know something about his life.
What is it about, what do you find interesting about Schubert's life in particular? Were you drawn to his personal life story, or is it just the music that that drives you towards Schubert this year?
Both.
Yeah.
We have already played music or concerts by Chopin, Bach, Beethoven, Mozart, and last year Haydn. Mm-hmm. So then I'm moving to some a little bit lesser known or less familiar mm-hmm. composers, not that we couldn't do more concerts with Beethoven or Mozart music, but yeah. I like the topic of music history, and I believe that most people aren't aware of the real life stories of these composers whose music may or may not be familiar to most people.
Yeah.
So Schubert himself was composing in the early Romantic period. The thing about Schubert's life that is so remarkable is that he only lived 31 years, but he wrote hundreds and hundreds of pieces of music. Mm-hmm. the vocal music alone, he wrote over 600 songs. And he's considered the master of the song, especially the German. Of course, he was Austrian. He was born in Vienna and was from Austria and spoke German. So all the vocal music he wrote was in German. And the German word for that is Lied, L-I-E-D. So he wrote over 600 German Lieder songs. And on our concert this coming weekend, three vocalists will be singing songs by him that fall into that category.
He wrote in the early Romantic period.
Yes.
What time period is that? And like, who were his contemporaries? I guess.
Well, he wrote in the beginning of the 1800s. Mm-hmm. He was born in 1797, and like I said, he only lived 31 years. So that was at the beginning of the 1800s. So he's considered a Romantic classicist, which means he was composing at the tail end of the classical period. So he was kind of copying the style of Mozart and Haydn, who Mozart also lived a very short life. But he was a contemporary of Beethoven's, Schubert was. And he actually worshipped Beethoven from afar. They even ate in the same restaurant sometimes, but Schubert was very shy and modest, and he would never go up to Beethoven and speak with him. But shortly before Beethoven died, he was able to review about 60 of Schubert's songs and said, surely Schubert has the divine spark. So Beethoven recognized Schubert's genius and asked to see him when he was on his deathbed. And even at that time, when Schubert was invited to come meet Beethoven, he had few words to say because he just was so in awe of Beethoven. And he was a torchbearer in Beethoven's funeral, and his greatest goal after that was to be buried next to Beethoven. And in fact, he is buried very near him.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would not have known really any of the details about, I think I would have known he's either German or Austrian, but I don't think I knew anything else about Schubert. Didn't know that he died young. Like I think, maybe just because they've been depicted in popular culture, we kind of have an idea of the story of Mozart, his life and his early demise.
More movies have been made about them.
Right. And then Beethoven too, and kind of a dramatic figure and the deafness at the end of his life and everything. But yes, I don't think I knew anything, would have known anything about Schubert. How did he, so he also died young, which is.
He did.
You could have told me that he lived for 75 years and I would have believed you. So that's very interesting.
Yes, yeah. He died of typhoid fever, which was the typical disease of the city slums. He lived, he was one of those true artists that didn't become entangled in the publishing or the marketing or the fame or anything having to do with getting his own work out there for people to see. He was too busy creating it. And he wrote music. His habit was to write music from 6 a.m. to 1 or 2 p.m. in the afternoon without a break. And then he would go have lunch with his friends and that kind of thing. But he was very methodical about it. Okay. But when he wasn't composing, he was talking about music, he was listening to it, he was thinking about it. It was all about the art.
And he knew, from what's his early life? How does coming up in the very early days of the 1800s, how do you decide you're going to be a composer? How does that happen?
He was born to, he was the 14th and youngest child in his family.
Yeah.
And the youngest one, he, nine of his siblings died in infancy. His father was a schoolmaster, and his mother was a cook. And so they lived in very humble surroundings. They lived in a small town near Vienna. Some people would call it a suburb, but of course it was smaller than that. His parents were God-fearing Catholics, and Schubert's father was an amateur cellist, and he loved music. He taught Franz how to play the violin when he was little, and his older brother, he had several of them, but his one of his older brothers gave him his first piano lessons. But almost right away, they realized their inadequacy as teachers. And so at the age of seven, Schubert was apprenticed to the local choir master at the parish church. His name was Michael Holzer. And Holzer taught him singing and organ and viola. And after only a short period, this old man said, "He seems to know each lesson perfectly before I can begin explaining it to him." And another time he said, "This little lad has harmony in his little finger." And so even though Schubert was not coming from any kind of family of privilege, he was so musical and so brilliant that he was given a, there were two vacancies that came open in the Vienna choir boys. And so his teacher, Michael Holzer, made sure that he was able to audition for that. Now he only, they had very, like I said, he was very poor. And so he wore this long gray frock or coat to the audition that was rather tattered. And some of the other auditioning boys called him the Miller's boy. Because he just looked poor. But one of the people that was auditioning him was Antonio Salieri. He was the dean. Now, Salieri was featured in Mozart's movie.
In Amadeus.
He was. And Salieri heard Schubert when he was 11. And even though the other students or potential auditionees were listening and watching everything. And Schubert was very shy and modest, and he got flustered. But when Salieri said, handed him music and said, "I want you to sing this," that he was, all of a sudden, he was confident and was able to sing out and did so well that they immediately chose him to be in the Vienna Choir Boys. And he was there in Vienna at that chapel for 5 years until his voice broke. And of course that was that was when they said, "See ya."
Okay.
And he learned a lot there.
Okay. And then by that, so then now he's in a he's a still a boy, really. I mean, he's still
16.
And and strikes out on his own at that point, or is he, he's recognized as a musical talent, and so...
Well, yes, and his his teachers, the orchestra conductor, Ruzice, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Ruzicka said, "I can't teach him anything else. He's learned it all from God himself." That was his comment. And then one time, Schubert turned in one of his compositions, and some of the other students, perhaps it was jealousy, I'm not sure, but his sounds were unique that he was creating, and some of the other students criticized Schubert's brand new composition. But the professor said, "If Franzl wrote it, it must be right. His ideas come straight from heaven." So then he was put into the more advanced class that was taught by Salieri. And when he witnessed Schubert's talent after several years of having been in the school, he said to Franz, "You can do everything, for you are a genius." So he he learned all these things in the school. Every evening the orchestra would play for an hour and a half all these symphonies by Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, Bach, Handel. So he got introduced to all these wonderful composers, and so he had a musical education, but it wasn't necessarily as systematic mm-hmm. as some of the other greats that you hear about.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
For interrupting.
Please, you go ahead.
At 16, when he abruptly had to leave the chapel school, he reluctantly yielded to his father's wish to come home and become a school teacher. He hated teaching mm-hmm. and the classroom. He was not able to maintain discipline in the classroom, and he was completely uninterested in the studies he had to teach.
Yeah. So there,
that lasted for 3 miserable years.
Okay, yeah. It didn't. We know that's not the end of the story, because we wouldn't know his name otherwise, I suppose. So
right.
Yeah.
So then he had a friend who offered him a place to stay, and so that was kind of his out. Mm-hmm. He, without teaching, he didn't have any money.
Yeah.
But because he was such a likable person, so humble and modest, friendly, sincere, full of integrity kind of person. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of friends, and he made a lot of friends once he left the teaching and moved into the city. His cheerful disposition won him a lot of friends in the arts. Mm-hmm. So he got to know singers, instrumentalists, poets, painters, sculptors. They all had this, they formed this little, they recognized his genius, and they formed this little clique around him called the Schubertians.
Uh-huh. Okay. And I like that.
Uh-huh. And he was the life of the party. Even though if we saw him today, we would think, what's the big deal? He wasn't really handsome, and he was 5'1" tall, mm-hmm. 1.5 inches tall. He was really too short to be conscripted for the military. Hmm. So, and plus, I believe at that time, teachers didn't have to go into the military. But nevertheless, he was too small.
Yeah.
And they said that he wasn't really handsome, but his eyes had this sparkle that was full of life. And they called it full of the divine fire. Uh-huh. It was that creative spirit that was in him. And if he hadn't had all these friends around him, we wouldn't have what we have today of his music. Mm-hmm. Number one, this friend, Von Spahn, who was 9 years older than him, Schubert had played in the orchestra behind this man. He was a law, studying law, and back in the chapel school, and he was wondering, who is this person that's playing second violin behind me that is right on and never making a mistake? So he turned around and saw it was this tiny little person playing the second violin. So he befriended him, and he realized that Schubert, who had just started composing when he was 13, he didn't even have enough money to be able to buy the music paper with the staves on it, the music mm-hmm. staff, to be able to compose. But he wanted to compose, and he was starting to compose anyway. So Von Spahn, from that point on, was supplying him with music paper.
Yeah.
Just to create the music on.
Uh-huh.
And the other friends were encouraging him. And mm-hmm. They're the ones that really appreciated him and enjoyed being around him. And so they would have these special evenings where they would go to someone's house. None of these artists were rich patrons.
Yeah.
They couldn't advance Schubert financially.
Yeah.
But they were there to just spur him on and encourage him and pay for his meals mm-hmm. at the restaurants and things like that. But they had friends that were more wealthy.
Yeah.
And so in the evenings, they would go to some of these more wealthy patrons' homes where Schubert would introduce his music and the singers would sing his music. They would all, it would be mm-hmm. all like sight reading. The word was they could give him a poem in the morning mm-hmm. and that evening they could hear the song being sung.
Yeah.
He composed with such rapidity. No, is that a word?
Yes, yes it is.
Yeah. With speed, with such great speed uh-huh. that sometimes he would compose 6 or 8 songs in one day.
Huh. And then you're in at this point, you're starting to see them performed or hear them performed as well.
Only yeah. in the small setting.
Okay.
Not publicly.
Uh-huh. When does that come?
He had his first mass was performed in the church, I believe, when he was 16 or 17.
Wow.
And
yeah.
He, like I said, he was shy. And even when he was, when his music was starting to finally get out there, there's a story of his first opera that was introduced and the audience loved it. And they went crazy. They were mm-hmm. Wild with applause and Schubert was backstage. And then the producer, called him out onto the stage after the whole thing was over. But he was too shy to go onto the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah. the producer finally, after several attempts, yeah. he finally had to say, well, I guess Schubert's not in the house tonight. So he wasn't
yeah.
able to really push forward his own music because of his personality.
Yeah. I think if I knew anything about Schubert, I think it would be his close relationship to the church, to religious music, I think is what I think of. During this whole time, is he a religious person, or is it that the church is, the church is just where music is made?
His parents were devout Catholics, mm-hmm. and they were definitely God-fearing, and he was raised with that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the Vienna Choir Boys, that was in a chapel, mm-hmm. and it was attached to the seminary. And so he did have Bible training. He knew the Bible. And he did write some masses for the Catholic Church. But interestingly, he also wrote music toward the end of his life for other churches as well.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was teaching, even he applied for 2 church positions. He would hope to be a Kapellmeister, like what we would call a music director or a music minister today. Mm-hmm. He had hoped to be have a church type of job,
yeah.
but he was turned down for both of the positions that he applied for, which he had hoped would get him out of teaching.
Yeah.
But he wasn't selected for either one of those positions.
Huh. Well,
but yes, he felt that music was something that should elevate people, that mm-hmm. should cause them to think about, like when he listened to one of Mozart's symphonies, he said, I could hear the angels singing.
Mm-hmm.
His heart was there. That doesn't mean that he didn't make any mistakes that he regretted
mm-hmm.
later. For example, one of his friends, the very first friend that offered him a place to stay, Johann Schober, he was an irreligious man
mm-hmm.
and led Schubert for a brief time into the nightlife in Vienna. And most scholars today believe that during that brief season that Schubert contracted syphilis,
mm-hmm.
and which he suffered with for probably 10 years of his life. And that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
He was actually hospitalized a little bit for that prior to his early death.
Yeah. This is okay. I'm now vaguely remembering that, like trying to remember what else I know about Schubert. Which
what
is
about
not much.
Ave Maria?
There you go. What about Ave Maria?
So, yeah. yes, Ave Maria is a very famous song, of course, that Schubert wrote, but he didn't ever write. He didn't ever call it that. Schubert's music was called, excuse me, I am not a speaker of German, but Ellen's Dritter Gesang, which translates as Ellen's third song. He wrote it in 1825 when he was 28 to the words of Sir Walter Scott's epic poem, The Lady of the Lake. The song does contain the words Ave Maria, but only in reference to the prayer itself. And now, of course, it's one of Schubert's most popular works, and it's been recorded by numerous artists, Pavarotti and all kinds of people.
Yeah.
Yes, with lyrics now that largely differ from the original poem. But actually, we do have someone that's going to be singing that song on our concert this Sunday.
With the original lyrics or the new one? Or the, I guess, the... Which version of that song will they be performing?
You know what? That is a great question. I'm going to be finding that out myself.
Okay.
And actually, she is going to be accompanied by a harpist.
Oh.
Our harpist, Rihanna Wright.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
I know everyone will enjoy it.
That is a, yeah, that's a lovely piece of music. I guess, so the Schubert, was he at the time, would you consider him like a revolutionary? Was he changing the way music was made and understood, or did he fit neatly in kind of into the existing musical world?
That's a great question. In some ways, he was springboarding off of the classical composers, Mozart, Haydn, and Beethoven's style, but he was also uniquely creative in that he was beginning to explore other harmonies and expressive means, and also the form of much of his music was very different because it sounded more improvisatory. Instead of fitting into the neat boxes, that's why this has unfinished symphony. It's beautiful, but it's unusual in that it only has two movements. And symphonies always had four movements. But he, that was toward the end of his life. And but his ninth symphony was a full-sized symphony, and it's called the Great Symphony.
The Great Symphony of Schubert. Okay,
but so little music by Schubert had been published or performed when he was alive that at the time of his untimely death, the music world in Vienna was completely unaware of how much he'd accomplished. So for years, most of Schubert's manuscripts lay neglected or completely forgotten.
Wow.
And many of them, most of them were at his brother Ferdinand's house. And the first discovery of a Schubert masterwork came a decade after his death. Robert Schumann, which many people know him as a romantic composer, Robert and Clara, his wife, were very well-known composers during their time. They were teachers during the later 1800s. Robert Schumann knew some of Schubert's music and admired it. He decided during a trip to Vienna in 1838 to call on Ferdinand, Franz's brother. And Ferdinand showed Schumann a ragged package of Schubert manuscripts, which had been lying in a disorganized state on a dusty shelf, untouched since Franz had died. And Schubert, just flipping through the music, he came upon Schubert's Ninth Symphony. And he realized, just looking at it, that it was a treasure. And so he was the one who was instrumental in starting to get Schubert's music published. And then in the next year, he had Mendelssohn perform that with an orchestra, had him perform that symphony for the first time ever.
Wow. Okay, so it was a written piece of music that had never been performed before.
Hundreds of Schubert's pieces of music had never been performed.
Oh, my.
Most of them.
Yeah. Well, how about that?
And in fact, probably his most famous symphony, the Unfinished Symphony, which was also discovered by someone else in a pile of disheveled manuscripts. It was first performed almost 50 years after Schubert had died.
My goodness. Okay. So his reputation is growing, mainly builds after his death.
That's correct.
Yeah. He was not a widely known figure in those days. That is startling. Did you know, you've done some research in this, obviously. Did you know the broad strokes of his life before looking into it, or did you make some discoveries while you were doing your research here?
Well, in school, of course, I learned music history, and even though that was in the late 1970s, I still love music history, and I am inspired by the lives of the composers that we still play music of. Those of us who are classically trained. And so I knew some of Schubert's history from learning it in school, but it's fun for me to have this concert every October, because it's sort of an excuse for me to dive deeper into their life stories and do the research. And I love being able to share that with others in a format that is palatable. Some people would think, oh, music history is so boring because these guys lived so long ago. But actually, when you learn about what kind of people they were, it's so fascinating. And it makes you, and then the combination of hearing some of their music during the concert and something about their life, really, I've had so many people after our previous concerts, single composer concerts in October, say, I'm going to go home and learn more about this person. I'm going to listen to more music by them, because I'm all of a sudden interested in them because I feel like I know something about them now.
Yeah. The pieces themselves, you try to kind of, do you try and follow along with the course of his life as far as chronologically? Do you start at the beginning and end with, you know, with something from the later period, or how do you
jump around? It depends on the year. This year,
oopsies, sorry. we'll turn that off. Continue. Yes, this year.
That's okay. This year, we are beginning with the students who are playing the a little bit easier pieces, and this is not in chronological order.
Sure.
And then moving to the more advanced players. We've got 25 performers in the concert. They range in age from 10 to senior adults. The majority are students under 18. We have a combination of solos, duets, and a quartet. And the instruments that will be featured are piano, flute, harp, vocal music, and then the concert will end with a string quartet.
Wow. Cool. This is a collaboration between the Bonners Ferry Community Orchestra and then also your business, the Novinger Music Center, which is That's where you do your, you do private instruction there, and anything else, or what else?
That's it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And is there a, is there a focus, I guess, of the, for the musicians, instrumentally, what do you, I mean, what do you, what kind of music and what kind of musicians do you, can you teach anybody anything? Can you teach the harmonica, for example, or you, do you focus on, certain instruments?
Well, the, in my opinion, the best two instruments to start students on are either the piano or the violin. So I teach piano, and along with other beginning band instruments, like flute, clarinet, alto sax, trumpet, trombone, and beginning percussion. Janet Peterson teaches violin. She comes in on Mondays and teaches violin in my studio. Mm-hmm. And so actually two of her students are going to be playing on her concert as well. They're going to be playing violin. And then Janet herself will be playing twice. She'll be playing the Schubert's Arpeggione Sonata in A minor with Rihanna Wright on harp. And then Janet will also be playing in the string quartet that concludes the concert, which is the Andante from the Rosamond Quartet.
Okay.
So...
the string quartet is, remind me what goes into a string quartet.
So we've got, two violins.
Uh-huh.
That will be Janet Peterson and Lydia Acton,
uh-huh.
A viola, Maureen Lang, and cello, and Sophia cello. Acton.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
this is going to be so cool. And this is at, it's called Becker Auditorium in Bonner Ferry High School.
Mm-hmm.
2 p.m. this Sunday.
It's a free concert.
Okay.
Donations will be accepted for our nonprofit community orchestra, but certainly not required.
Mm-hmm.
But we welcome anybody and everybody to come and just enjoy Schubert's music as well as learn something about his life.
We will... we're going to have to find some Schubert to play here on the air. the Bonner's Ferry Community Orchestra itself is made up of how many members are in the community orchestra? For those who didn't hear our last conversation and just briefly,
we are about 50 strong.
That is really something.
The orchestra has grown from 15. I know that when it first started, 50 years ago, mm-hmm. That there were more. But when I joined in 2015, there were 15 members.
Yeah.
And so from that point, it has grown to 50. And so, yes, we are, they are growing in quantity and quality.
Uh-huh.
And we're very excited about our upcoming Christmas concert, Christmas Through the Ages, on December 8th.
Okay, and tell us about that. What is Sunday, December 8th? What is that concert going to be like? Have you decided? Is everything known? Do you know what pieces you're performing and everything?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Musicians have to prepare.
Sure,
you know,
have to
rehearse. Make choices uh-huh. way ahead of time. So I'm listening to Christmas music in July and the first part of August.
Yeah.
And selecting it, and we're purchasing it. So... this concert is going to be really interesting because it will be in chronological order.
Mm.
We're going to begin with music, a cappella vocal music. The whole thing will be Christmas music. It's very family friendly, the concert is. And it's going to begin with some a cappella older music that was, you know, back in the... year 1000 AD.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll move from there to an arrangement of O Come Emmanuel
mm-hmm.
with a few instruments and voices. And then we're going to be playing a Basque carol.
Mm-hmm.
That will be also with voices, strings, and recorders. So this concert's going to be different than we've played in the past because various songs will feature various parts of the orchestra. We will have a brass choir on one of the numbers. We will have a woodwind choir on another number. We'll have strings only on especially the Pastoral Symphony. Another thing that we're doing, which I'm very excited about, is a few excerpts from Messiah.
Mm, cool.
And I don't know if anyone in the Sandpoint area has, because I'm not as familiar with the music in Bonner County as I am in Boundary County, but we're going to do three of the pieces that are the vocal pieces from Messiah, and the Glory of the Lord, For Unto Us a Child is Born, and the Hallelujah Chorus. And it's going to be a sing-along Messiah. So even though we're going to have a small ensemble on the stage kind of leading, we want the audience to participate and sing along with us.
Okay.
So we're going to be, people can bring their own scores if they have them, because it's just going to be the original music. Or if they don't have the score, we'll be handing out the music to whoever would like to sing along as they walk through the door.
Okay. I can do I know the Hallelujah Chorus. I think most people do. I don't know if I know any other parts of that, not by heart anyway. Mm-hmm. I think I'm sure I've heard it, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's going on my calendar, I guess. The sing-along Hallelujah Chorus. That'll be fun. The sing-along Messiah. That's very cool. Go ahead.
And then after the intermission, the Messiah music will come before the intermission. So, of course, that was Baroque music. Handel wrote it. And then after the intermission, then we'll start moving into the 1800s and 1900s and then completely contemporary Christmas music. So we will be playing O Holy Night, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer as a contrast.
Yeah.
A medley called There's Christmas in the Air, which includes There's No Place Like Home for the holidays and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas and so forth. And then we will be doing a song called Mary, Did You Know? That's going to be sung by Tatiana Dewberry. She is 16 and just has a beautiful, I would say, angelic-sounding voice. And then we're going to do an arrangement of 8 tunes called Christmas on Broadway. That is kind of the furthest end of the spectrum from the beginning of the concert. So the audience will hear quite a variety of music.
How do you, the arrangement of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, for example, but that's going to be performed by the orchestra, in an orchestral style?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It will be very easy to sing along for anyone who would like to.
Okay.
And also the medley, There's Christmas in the Air, will include Frosty the Snowman and Santa Claus is Coming to Town. So we are, although there will be a lot of sacred music sung and played, we're going to have plenty of contemporary or secular music as well.
Very neat.
That sounds familiar to the listeners.
Yeah. And that is on December 8th, coming up in Becker Auditorium. How many people can fit in Becker Auditorium? And what happens if it gets full? Are you allowed to do it again or anything?
Up to this point, we have only played one concert at a time, mainly because of the logistics. We have had Becker Auditorium filled to capacity for the last two of our concerts.
That's very cool.
And that is, don't quote me, but I want to say 400.
My goodness. That's very neat.
The most remarkable audience we had was a year ago Christmas when we had a blizzard. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just thought, sure, it would just ruin the day. But actually, we had more people at that blizzard concert than we had ever had before. So that was really exciting.
Wow. That is very neat. Okay. So what does that mean for our listeners? That means get there early, I guess, huh? If you want to get a seat, get to Becker Auditorium early, certainly for the Christmas concert.
The concert will start at 3 p.m.
Okay.
And I would like to say, too, that one of the reasons we haven't played more than one concert in a row in Bonner's Ferry is because we have quite a contingent of players coming from Libby and Troy, Montana, as well as the Sandpoint area and Sagal. It's quite a sacrifice for them to drive all the way to Bonner's Ferry to rehearse with us and then to play in the concert. Mm-hmm. And in fact, last spring in May, we did play a secondary concert in Libby.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, we have so many players coming from there to play with us, which we greatly appreciate.
Yeah. So you kind of go and play on their home court for once or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This weekend is the Schubert Festival, or the celebration of the music of Franz Schubert, again at Becker Auditorium. It's at 2 p.m. on Sunday. That's at Bonner's Ferry High School. It's not just the music, but also kind of the story of his life and his influence. You mentioned, I think, 25 performers in that one, 25
yes.
people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doing a variety of pieces from throughout his composing career. Do you already know who you're going to do, just out of curiosity, who's going to be next October?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I'm going to have to say no.
Okay.
I don't know yet.
You're focused on Schubert right now. Yeah.
Yes.
Do you find yourself drawn particularly to Franz Schubert, either as a composer or as a human being? I guess do you make a personal connection to him? What do you think is most?
Yes, I do. I want to say that he, like I said, I think a little earlier, he was drawn to Beethoven's music.
Mm-hmm.
Beethoven was his hero. And once upon a time, Schubert said to one of his friends, "Who can do anything after Beethoven?"
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of complaining because Beethoven had really, he felt, maxed out all the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Because Beethoven was so creative and... but having said that, Schubert still had the courage to write more symphonies himself.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that should encourage each one of us to make our statement. Whatever that is, it may be better than we think.
Mm-hmm.
It inspires me to step out on a limb and do something that maybe new for me, say writing a book,
mm-hmm.
or trying something I haven't tried before, or it inspires me to do something even if I don't feel that prior to doing it that it's going to be wonderful or that it's going to leave a legacy or anything like that, but just mm-hmm. to do it. I think that Schubert encourages us to do our best at whatever we attempt. And we never know whose life we may touch with that.
Yeah.
And also I want to say that Schubert's friends have also inspired me to speak positively into others' lives, because you don't know as an individual touching people in your sphere of influence who you might encourage or motivate to do what they do best. And if they didn't have your encouragement, maybe they might not try that.
Yeah.
So friends, really good, loyal friends are very important as well.
Franz Schubert is, I have enjoyed hearing you kind of tell me about what, about the story of his life. I hope that our audience has too. There's more to be heard if people want to attend. Glenda Novinger has been our guest here, and we've been talking about Schubert and the Bonner Ferry Community Orchestra. The concert is on Sunday, 2 p.m. at Becker Auditorium in Bonner's Ferry for our listeners who feel like making the drive up there, which at 2 p.m. is a very, to me, a very doable date at if you want to drive to Bonner's Ferry. It's easier to make that happen than like an evening and then knowing that you're going to have to drive home in the dark. So I like that that timing. One, I guess, of course, if there's anything else you want to say, I invite you to, but how can people find out more who are interested, who maybe only heard a little bit of this recording? Where do you have a website, or how do we get in touch with either the Bonner's Ferry Community Orchestra or your business, the Novinger Music Center?
So you can email me at novingerpiano @gmail.com. You can call or text at 208-597-1118. You can go to the Bonner's Ferry Orchestra's website, which is bonnersferryorchestra.com.
Let's see. I'll see if I can find it while you.
Okay.
Bonner's
that I.
Ferry.
I'm striking a blank here right now. .org or .com.
It's .org. It's just Bonner's Ferry Orchestra.org. It's the website of the Bonner's Ferry Community Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And there you go. And it's there's a mailing list there that you can sign up for as well, if you are interested. Wonderful.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jack.
Thank you, Glenda. Once again, this has been a very interesting conversation. I look forward to having another one sometime in the spring or in the summer, or when you decide on who your next composer is going to be. Please come on down. It was great to talk to you.
It was my pleasure, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Okay, now we're going to play something by Franz Schubert to send us out. And thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you.